So, today we're talking about the third noble truth, that is the truth that there is a cessation to suffering. And I'll put an asterisk on suffering, but there is a cessation to suffering, and also that it comes from a cessation of craving, a stopping, an end to craving. So, in a way, I think of like, you know, I sometimes imagine, you know, if someone's giving a lecture and they're talking about the three noble truths, they're talking about, yes, there is suffering, you know, there is a cause of suffering, and, you know, they're going through the first and second noble truth. I can imagine like, I don't know why I imagine this, some, you know, those are really interesting meaty subjects, but somehow I imagine in my head, like some members of the audience kind of like starting to nod off, maybe a little snoring coming, and then you hear the third one. And you're like, there's a permanent end to suffering, and it comes from stopping craving. And I feel like everyone, you know, like wakes up like, what? What are you talking about? This is kind of, at least for me, this is the one that's like, huh? What? You know, suffering, sure, there's suffering. Causes of suffering, yeah, all right. A permanent end to suffering, what? You know, it kind of gets my attention. So I find this a really fun topic. And full disclosure, I also find this a really challenging topic. I still have a struggle with the idea of a permanent cessation to suffering. And it's something that goes back and forth in my head. As different parts of me and different experiences emerge, I feel more confident at times. Yeah, that really feels real. And more doubt at times. Like, can it really be real? So I go through all of this when I think of this permanent end to suffering. I want to talk today about thinking about this third noble truth through a specific lens. And this is a lens that Lindell 2 weeks ago mentioned. This comes from Joseph Goldstein's framing of this topic. In the book One Dharma, and he kind of says that there are two ways that we can approach this goal of the end of suffering. One is described as building from below, and that's kind of, you know, working with the things we're trying to get rid of, right? So when we talk about the end of suffering, you know, one of the ways we can approach it is working with the suffering, working with the craving and the aversion that, you know, that is the cause of suffering, right? That suffering arises from this craving and aversion. And also we can work with the ignorance of impermanence, right? Believing, well, the ignorance that leads us to think that things are permanent, right? That kind of ignorance that we live with, where we kind of, We move towards things, we crave things, we're averted from things, because the things we're craving, we somehow believe will give us some kind of lasting peace. And they don't, right? We know this from repeated experience that nothing gives us that kind of lasting relief from suffering, these things in the material world that we often crave or push away from. So yeah, working with all of those factors, that's the building from below approach to the third noble truth, to ending suffering. And then there's also this other way of working with it that's described, the swooping down from above, right? And so, like, you know, as opposed to working with the things that are in the way, right, the things we know about that we're trying to get rid of, we can also work with these flashes of experience, these moments where we experience certain kinds of freedom, right? You know, everyone can probably relate to moments in their life where you just experienced a relative freedom, a relative ease. Maybe it felt like suddenly things just felt lighter for a moment. Maybe things you live with regularly, like anxieties, just kind of lifted, you know? And we can all identify with certain moments like this where we touched something that felt like freedom. So I want to focus on the swooping down from above today. these moments, and I want to talk about what they can do for us, and also, you know, some of the pitfalls, some of the problems and challenges we can encounter. So why swoop down from above? Why do we do this? How does this help us reach the end of suffering? So there's a Buddhist quote that sometimes comes to mind when I think about this, and it is, be careful not to confuse the finger pointing to the moon for the moon itself, right? And you often hear this idea of pointing to the moon or pointing to the moon, but the full phrase is, don't get stuck looking at the finger. Look at the moon. Don't stare at the finger. Look at the moon itself, right? And there are ways in which these moments, you know, I'm going to call them epiphanies for now, and I'm going to talk about what that word actually means. They're kind of pointing us at the actual moon, right? And the finger you can think of as often the teachings, right? And so the idea behind that phrase is we can sometimes get bogged down in the teachings and not lose sight of the goal, like the moon. Right? The moon sort of being this third noble truth, the cessation of suffering, right? And these experiences are little tastes, little touches that can reorient us with this. So I'm going to talk today a lot from personal experience. And, you know, I say this with a lot of humility. We're talking about the third noble truth, the permanent cessation of suffering. I have no personal experience of the permanent cessation of suffering. I am not liberated. and so I have to be humble. We all have to be humble if we're in this state. And we're talking about this moon that we've never been to, right? So really all I can do is tell you a little bit about what I work with, what I struggle with, and some of my reflections on this path, specifically this path of this aspect of the path, this swooping down from above, this way of working with epiphany. And I'll start by saying, by kind of confessing my Buddhist personality type. So I don't know if you've heard of these. This is a kind of fun exercise for those of you who like this kind of thing. I first encountered this in Jack Kornfield's book, I think it was in A Path with Heart, where he talks about how many of us, I don't know if it's all of us, but many of us are fundamentally oriented towards one of three personality types. And they're associated with these sort of the three poisons of greed, hatred, and delusion, right? So we're either greed-oriented, where, you know, we are cravers, right? We're people who really associate with the craving in life. Or, you know, the hatred, we are aversive. We're mostly associated with the things we don't want in life. We know we want to be away from this thing and away from this thing. And, you know, that is often associated with having a kind of critical lens. And then the third is delusion, right? And I think, let me read a quote on this. This personality type is marked by confusion, ignorance, and misunderstanding of reality. People with the deluded nature are also often unaware of the impermanent and interdependent nature of existence. So I think this third one is me. I think I'm a deluded type. I work with confusion all the time. And in fact, I'm confused about even whether I am this type, because sometimes I think, well, if I'm working with confusion, I'm aware of confusion, maybe I'm not deluded about the impermanent nature. Like I notice that I have this confusion. So does that mean I'm not the confused type? But of course, that's confusion right there, right? Like here I am being confused about whether I'm confused. So I'm pretty sure that actually points me to being the deluded personality type. In any case, I mention all of this because every now and then in my life, I have had I don't want to say all, but probably all or a whole lot of us have had these moments where there's a sudden lifting of confusion, right? And I'm referring to epiphanies here. And for me, they feel like a sudden lifting of confusion. They may feel different for you. So I asked ChatGPT what an epiphany was. I'll confess, okay? ChatGPT tells me this. Take it or leave it. An epiphany is a moment of sudden clarity or realization, often described as a profound insight or understanding that changes the way we perceive a situation, idea, or aspect of life. Some key qualities of epiphany are its suddenness. It kind of comes unexpectedly. It just, aha, whoa, we're in this state. This state came upon us. Clarity, right? This is that lifting of confusion for me. The realization is clear and unambiguous in an epiphany. It's a light bulb moment where everything sort of makes sense, right? At least for a moment, it kind of feels like that. And it's also characterized, according to ChatGPT, by impact, right? This is the insight or understanding is something fairly big, right? When we're in this moment, we kind of recognize its largeness. Right? It alters your perspective or your mindset in some meaningful way. It goes on to say it can lead to personal growth, a shift in behavior, or a change in how we view the world. Right? There's often this residue after an epiphany where our worldview is maybe slightly shifted or slightly different for having had it. Right? How many of you can identify with any aspect of this in your life? Have you ever felt something like this? I see a lot of hands going up. Something and some nodding. Something like, yeah, okay, I've had these moments, maybe way back when. And, you know, it can be helpful, to take a moment and think through, like just try and recall a feeling we've had where suddenly we felt a little lighter, you know, or a feeling of clarity, or just a feeling that, you know, something that has always been like a cloak on our shoulders was lifted. You know, we didn't have a heaviness. So I'd invite you to take a moment and bring to mind, so you could maybe identify with the word epiphany, but if you don't identify with the word epiphany, it's fine to just think of moments in your life where you felt a little bit more like things made sense, or a little bit more light. And bring to mind that feeling. Where were you? What did it feel like in the body, in the emotional space? Yeah. Now, I want to describe an experience that I had like this and sort of my struggle with it. Before and after. And by the way, if you're like, I have no idea what you're talking about, this experience does not connect with me, that is fine. You'll be pleased to know that there are all kinds of things that are issues with epiphanies that can lead us astray. But so the first experience that I had, well, not the first experience I had, but one that is memorable, which I've talked about actually many times over talks here, is a retreat experience I had in 2013. And it was my first meditation retreat in this lineage, you know, in mindfulness, Vipassana movement, you know, the insight meditation in this lineage. I'd previously meditated, but more in sort of a concentration practice. And on this retreat, I just had this moment. You know, and it was a specific moment. We were being taught a bunch of different meditative tools, and one of them was eyes open meditation. And we were sitting outside on a lawn in Big Sur, California, looking toward the ocean, and with our eyes closed, right? And I opened my eyes because we were asked to open our eyes at this point in the meditation to start practicing eyes open meditation. And we were supposed to say, we were asked to look at some kind of dull point in our vision, you know, something not particularly interesting that would really captivate us, but just to keep our eyes open and kind of a little diffused, unfocused vision. So I happened to open my eyes on this spot on the ocean. And right on that spot in the ocean, as I opened my eyes, this humpback whale fully breached, spouted in midair, like in this sort of perfect cartoon version of a humpback whale, and then splashed back into the ocean. And I just gasped, and something happened. And I could, well, I won't go into the whole experience, but it was this thing where I'd been feeling up until that point for many years, like I didn't have really access to emotion. I wasn't sure when I was happy or stressed or sad. It was really hard to tell these things. It really felt like I was in a kind of haze, a confusion. And it was like someone pricked a balloon of confusion, and this joy just started spurting out of me. And I was like that for days. Like I couldn't speak for most of the rest of the time I was there. Like I would try to speak and I couldn't find words. And I didn't sleep more than 2 or 3 hours a night, but it was fine. It was a really, really dramatic experience, and it was very clear in the body. And I think one of the most important things about it was I kept having this feeling like, this is real. This is really happening. I'm having this experience. And I even told myself at the time, I need to remind myself later that this happened, like that this is real, because I know I'm going to doubt that later. And so, you know, the retreat ended. The experience kind of lasted a while afterward. And I did the thing that, you know, you're not supposed to do. I started to kind of chase it. You know, I started to, I would go, I, the first, the week after I had this retreat, I would ask people, you know, like, hey, I went to like, I was in San Francisco right after that retreat. And I went to like the Zen Buddhist Center in San Francisco. And I asked the random person who was there, like, I was like, I had this experience. I don't know what to do with it. And they said something like, I think you know what to do with it. And I was like, well, that's not helpful. I don't know what to do with it. And so I wrestled with this for a while. But I got the good advice to not chase this. And it was good advice, particularly because it was a temporary experience, right? I had it, and it eventually faded over time. It left a marked impression on me. It didn't fade in the sense that it didn't change my life. It did. But that feeling and that state where, you know, while I was in that state, it also felt like, you know, I could die in this moment and that would be fine. That was the feeling I had then. That didn't last, right? I came back to moments where I really had a problem with dying in that moment. You know, I wouldn't have wanted to die in some many future moments after that. And I wasn't permanently unburdened of suffering. Suffering came back. So I think that was the good advice to not chase this. Don't keep re-triggering this thing that's not the goal. Don't keep chasing this thing that isn't really permanent. Right? And I want to mention, you know, these kinds of experiences, there's so many ways we could get them. They don't have to be through retreats. There are all kinds of things we can do. People go to jhana states, right? States of deep contentment. There's psychedelic medicines. There's holotropic breathing. There's exposure to extreme situations. And it's easy to get stuck chasing a lot of these. And when we do get a little hooked on these, they eventually, I think, become deeply saddening. Because we latch our hopes onto them and we eventually realize that they too ultimately go away. They disappoint in some sense. But also, this thing gave me a taste of freedom beyond anything I'd known. And it gave me a sense that there was some hidden capacity in me, right? Like, so there's this quote from the Buddha that is something like, when translated, the mind is clear and luminous, momentarily clouded by passing defilements. right? It's the sense that our nature is fundamentally this sense of clarity, and it's only being obscured from us. And this kind of felt true to me. You know, it feels true when I hear that statement, and whenever we have a slight lifting, it doesn't have to be a big epiphany moment like this. When it lifts, I often have a sense that when it's lifted, I'm in a more natural state. You know, like this is actually what we ought to be in. This is possible. And this doesn't take energy. I'm not being, my battery isn't draining in some sense from being in this state. In a sense, I feel like I'm expending less energy. I'm more relaxed. I'm more at myself. So, that statement starts to feel true when we get tastes of freedom like that. So I think there's a value in that. And I think it gave me my fundamental determination to stay on this path. So that's not a small thing. But as I did chase it, I began to notice a pattern. And the pattern was this. I actually went to the same place where I had that experience over and over. And I still even go there sometimes. And, you know, it didn't even occur to me that I was just chasing the thing, right, by doing this. But I would often have this experience, and nothing was quite the same as that first time. But I would often have an amazing insight that felt quite enveloping, or an experience that felt quite enveloping. In that moment, a hope that it would stay with me. Then a gradual fading of the experience as I come down from the mountain. And then some lasting residue that felt beneficial, something that felt like I'd learned. In other words, I started to get acquainted with the impermanence of this. And I think fundamentally, that is the most important lesson I've learned from this, is that even these really big things are impermanent. And that's a downer. That is a sad experience to have. But it is a profound experience. And I want to tell you that now when I look back, I realize that I could have always known it was impermanent. And there's a reason. Even in those moments when it was totally enveloping, remember how I said, I want to remember this. I want to kind of remember that this was real. So if I interrogate the feeling I had in those moments, there was in them a clinging. There was a fear of this dwindling. There was a knowledge that this was not permanent. And there was this coddling almost of the experience, you know, where I really wanted to keep it, you know, intact and shielded from assailment from outside forces. And what we're told about enlightenment is that it is not that. It does not need that shielding. It does not need that coddling. It is not something that we worry about losing, right? It's there. It's there permanently, right? And so I should have known, I should have known. In retrospect, I can see that there was always a seed of doubt. So there is a quote from the Buddha that is related to this. It is that the Third Noble Truth points to the remainderless fading away and cessation of craving. Remainderless, right? And even in these moments, we don't usually see completely seed craving, right? I was probably still like 5% craving or 10% craving or maybe more, I don't know, in these moments. You know, and even when I thought in this moment, you know, like, and in other moments when I think I could die contentedly in this moment, and I take that as some sort of proof that this is some big moment, a part of me wants to test it. I'm like, really? What if that means never seeing my son again? But then another part of me, when I go down that path, another part of me is like, shh, just go with it. Just go with it. And that second part of me is really pointing to that this is really kind of fragile. Right? I don't want to test these moments because they might break. Right? So, the epiphany experiences, some pros that I've mentioned, right? One is, it's connected to the moon, not the finger. This can be used as kind of a lighthouse for where we're going to. Right? it gives us a taste of freedom, right? We get a taste of that, and that can stimulate determination, energy for this path. You know, I am someone who doubts a lot, and I sometimes will even get the doubt, like, do I even meditate? Like, am I doing anything here? Like, am I just pretending this whole time? I'm sure this is I think we've all had that feeling at some point. Not all, but maybe a lot of us have had that feeling at some point. And this, I can always go back to this. And it's relatively easy to convince myself that something like this is real. Right? So we can go back to these points in our life. However, you know, whether they were lightning strikes or whether they were subtle or smaller, right? And remember the truth of them. So, but the dangers of these, one is even when it's occurring, it's not remainderless. It's not a true cessation very often, right? So and that makes it dangerous to chase. The other thing about them is they are actually impermanent, right? But I want to make the point also that learning that they're actually impermanent, going through the struggle, has been a very valuable thing for me, because it really does point us to this ignorance that we have about all things, this ignorance that we think things are permanent, you know? We really do view so many things in our life in subtle secret ways as being permanent. And so one, I want to also posit, I'll end with this. One other restatement of the third noble truth is that it's the end of suffering that comes from the cessation of ignorance. Okay, so how do we resolve this? Is the cause ignorance or is the cause craving? Sometimes we hear the cessation of craving. And sometimes we also hear the cessation is ignorance. And I'm mentioning this because sometimes I find it really helpful to think about the cessation of ignorance instead of craving. And while they sound different, ignorance is defined here. What we really mean here is not fully understanding the three marks of existence. Impermanence, the nature of suffering, and the fact that our own selves, our very ideas of ourselves, are not what we think. They are not these permanent, fixed, solitary things. So when we think about the ignorance of the fact of impermanence, right, this ignorance leads to craving. So this is the connection, right? That kind of ignorance that things are impermanent is why we crave things. We wouldn't crave these things if we realized it's just going to go away in a moment. So we mistakenly cling as though things are permanent, think they'll bring us lasting happiness. So when we talk about the cessation of craving, in some ways, something behind that is the cessation of ignorance, this kind of ignorance of impermanence, right? And this, you know, this sort of true, what I feel like is the truest learning from Epiphany is the fact of its impermanence. That this big, vast thing goes away. And I have that experience over and over. Okay, it is 11:02. I have exceeded my quota for speaking today. Thank you for bearing with me. And so we'll move now to a set of breakout rooms, right? So we'll have a moment to discuss anything that's come up for you today as I've been speaking, anything on this third noble truth. And so I'll divide you into breakout rooms in Zoom, 3 or 4 people. And you can discuss anything that's come up. But one topic that if you're struggling for a topic, one thing that you can talk about is any experience you've had where you felt a lightening. I don't want a lightening of the load, a shift, a subtle shift. It could be, you know, a flat out lightning strike epiphany, or it could be something more subtle, just a moment that felt like, ah, this feels lighter, this feels different. It points me to the moon. Yeah. Okay. Okay, I'll give anyone who must leave a moment to leave. And then I'll break us out into groups. All right. Welcome back, everyone. There's a little time. Apologies, we went a couple minutes over what I anticipated. So we'll have maybe a little less time for questions in order to finish on time at 11:30, but certainly there's time for a couple. Jennifer, I see you raised your hand. Hi, it's been a while since I've seen you. Yeah, please feel free to unmute.
Okay. So I enjoyed the talk and it was great to remember epiphanies that I've had. However, excuse my ignorance, but I'm not sure I understand the connection between the third noble truth and epiphanies. If you could elaborate, please.
So the context in which I think of this is that Joseph Goldstein kind of described these two paths that kind of lead us to words. So the cessation of suffering, right, is this thing that, is described to occur sometimes as a lightning strike, sometimes as something, almost random seeming, although we can create the conditions through which this lightning strike is more likely to happen, right? To actually become to reach a state where there is no more suffering and that is a permanent truth for us, right? And in creating those conditions by which it becomes we're more likely to experience this, we're creating the conditions conducive to that end of suffering. One is this, and this is a whole path I did not spend today describing. But one is this whole idea of building from beneath, building up our understanding of suffering, of craving, the cause of suffering, of aversion, of ignorance, building up our understanding of these. And, we practice with, that sort of level of understanding. We're actually looking at the problems, the things that are obstacles. The other way is the sort of swooping down from above. And this swooping down from above is connecting us to experiences where we've had glimpses of this freedom. And so epiphanies are one description of these glimpses.
I got it. Yeah, thanks.
Yeah, you're welcome. Yeah. That's a good question. It's an important question. Yeah. Jerry, I saw your hand was up earlier.
Oh, yeah, I'll say something. I just wanted to express appreciation for your talk, Arv. It kind of triggered a number of, paths I could go on to reflect, and I really felt your connection to the topic and how it was really coming from your heart. So
Thank
appreciate
you.
the sincerity of, and yeah, epiphany, what a nice reflection, on these, and impermanence. Oh, there I got it. Oh, okay, where was that now? Yeah. Yeah,
Exactly.
fun thing to reflect on.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I think there's, even though, yeah, it's impermanent, there does seem to be something that's sticks that gets to be wisdom. Yeah. And a reference point. Oh, yes, there's that confidence about that a possibility, even though it might not be reproduced exactly.
I really thank you, Jerry, and I'm really glad it was helpful in stimulating paths forward. You mentioned something that resonates with me, which is, I was describing a separate path, this sort of swooping down from above and this building up from below. But I think ultimately the lesson that I take from my experiences of things like epiphany actually almost place them in this building from below category, because they're building up this understanding that, in two ways. One is the thing you mentioned, right? Like they do leave a residue. There is something that we learn from them and we move through afterward, even if, we don't get the glory of the feeling that we had when we first experienced them. They often leave something, and that's that slow building of a foundation. So they're contributing to that. And the other is just seeing their impermanence, right? Is an experience of impermanence. It's an experience of our ignorance. And that feels aligned in some way with that other path. We're building our knowledge base for all the things that don't give us lasting cures to suffering. Yeah. Thanks. Yeah. Yeah. This is probably time for, yeah, I see Anna raising hand. So Sue's raised her hand also. Okay.
I was just going to say, well, first of all, it's my first time here, so this is just wonderful, and thank you all for just doing what you're doing.
Welcome.
I think that one of the cool things that is coming to my mind is, like, there's, you know, it's always about letting go and releasing and allowing time and time again, but also just kind of this relief in the, like, that epiphany itself is the teaching in the way it comes to us. Like, just wrapping my mind around the fact of, like, how funny it is that we would even chase something that can only happen spontaneously. Where it's like, it's not even possible to get it by doing that. And so I'm just sitting with, like, what does it look like to sit back and allow and more practice the conditions under which they would occur.
Right.
And create that environment within ourselves rather than going after something.
Yeah. Yeah. There's a deep paradox here. Oh man, this could be like another hour. There is a deep paradox here. And yes, what does it look like to try and create those conditions? And yet, when we talk about helpful things to lead us to the cessation of suffering, we're also talking about creating the conditions under which this thing we can't control will happen. Right? So what does that mean? What are we, you know, are we doing the right thing or are we not? And, you know, the teachings would say, yeah, this is the right thing. You know, this is something we should be going for. This is something we should have some passion for. And what distinguishes it from chasing an epiphany and trying to create the conditions of another epiphany, like my going to the same retreat center and sitting on the same lawn over and over again, right? You know, what distinguishes one from the other? I think that's a really rich path of inquiry. Yeah. Yeah, thank you.